And with that, let's move on to item six, which is the presentation of the actuarial audit report by Chiron. Good morning. The floor is yours when you are ready.
PDF of that report. We're not going to go through that report.
Hang on one moment. Do we have his mic on? And then,
is that better?
Yes.
All right.
Infinitely better. Yeah, the red light's counterintuitive. The red light means you're on.
It's fine. So, as you'll learn, I'm colorblind. So
there you go. Anyway. I'll let you know.
Looks green to me.
You're good.
So we have a full report, but the basic takeaway for our presentation is that it's a clean audit. So we're not going to go through every table within that report. We're just going to try to hit some of the highlights, sort of the overall results of the audit, and just a few comments that we have, mostly for Siegel to take into account in future experience studies. So with that, I'll dive right into it. We did a complete independent replication of your December 31st, 2023 actuarial evaluation, which is set for approval after this. We also did a review of the most recent experience study, which covered the period from 2018 through 2020. And we also reviewed the most recent GASB 68 report, which was as a measurement date of June 30th last year. The main conclusions were overall liabilities and costs are good, reasonable, can be relied on. We match them very closely. The methods and the assumptions are reasonable, and they comply with actuarial standards of practice. And the information in the GASB report was also accurate and complete and provides the information that both the system and the employers need for their financial statements. So how did we go about this audit? We used the same census data that CICERA provides to Siegel, and we built our own independent model of the plan. Using this data, we performed a full parallel actuarial evaluation. So we you know, as if we were the evaluation actuary, and then we compared our results to Siegel's. We also had information from them in terms of the data that they used, in terms of any changes that they made to the original data provided by CICERA. So there's a lot of numbers that go in their report, right? And there's a lot of numbers in our report. I will try to avoid reading tables and tables of numbers, because I know there's that's the quickest way to lose anyone's attention when you're talking to an actuary. But the most important measurement that we look at is the present value of benefits, right? So that's the value in today's dollars of all the benefits that expect to be paid to the current members of the plan. So that's your active members, retirees, and anybody do a deferred benefit, right? So Siegel calculates that measure, that number, as of the valuation date, as of December 31st, 2023, they calculated a number of $14.7 billion. Within an actuarial audit, sort of the industry standard that we hear about is trying to match results within 5%. Right? As long as we are within 5%, we think there's likely not to be any really significant calculation errors in the programming. There are some measurements, however, where we like to be closer than 5%, and the present value of benefits is one of them. We want to be sure that we can match that result very closely, and what we generally target for the present value of benefits is actually try to be within 1%. And the good news, if we compare our results to Siegel's, we also calculated $14.7 billion. So we were within 0.3% of Siegel's results, which indicates an incredibly close match in terms of our results to theirs based on an independent coding of a different valuation system. We look at a couple other measurements. So we take that present value of benefits and we split it up into two pieces. The accrued liability, or the benefits that have already been earned based on service to date. So for your retirees, that's all of the value of their benefits. For the actives, it's whatever is based on prior service. And you can see the comparison between our results and Siegel's results here are also very close. If we look at them comparatively, it's still within 1% on all three of those measurements. So that's a great match. Siegel also has, in their report, information on the unfunded liability and the funded ratio, the funded status of the plan. So the funded status, you're comparing the assets to the liabilities. We are collecting independently from CICERA all the information that they provided to Siegel in terms of the reserve balances, the changes of the statement and net position of the assets. We independently calculate that smooth value of assets. We got the exact same number because that calculation is very straightforward. And when you compare the assets to the liabilities, we also compare the unfunded liability. And there we are within, you know, $60 million of Siegel's results, which is a very close match for a plan that has over, you know, $12 billion in liabilities. That difference is a little bit larger in terms of a percentage. It's around 5% in terms of the unfunded liabilities, a dollar amount. That difference doesn't concern us because your unfunded liability is quite small, right? As of December 31st, 2023, it was quite small compared to the overall asset and liability value. So the percentage differences there are, you know, they are larger, but they are small in terms of the dollar amount. We next look at the calculations of the actuarially determined contribution, right? So that's the calculation of the employer contribution rates for the following fiscal year, so that starts 18 months later. Our results are very close to Siegel's. We were within 0.4% of pay, which works out to a 1.4% relative difference. Again, well within that 5% target threshold that we were looking at. We also split that result up into different components. There's the component to pay for the unfunded liability, right? The amortization of that unfunded liability, which Siegel calculated as about 13.5%. We were around 13% of pay, very close. And also our calculation of the normal cost, or the cost of the benefits that, that members are earning this year, net of the member rates, is within 0.1%. So great, great match on all of those. Moving right through it, we also look at the cost, the schedules in the report that break up the liabilities and the costs into the various cost groups, right? You have a lot of different cost groups. You've got a dozen in this plan with different tiers within each of those cost groups. So we compared our results to theirs, and to avoid putting another table with lots and lots of numbers up here, we are showing you here our comparison color-coded, which is challenging for me, hopefully not so much for you all. But what we want to avoid is things that are dark red. And as you can see, there's nothing that's dark red here, right? So it's color-coded. Anything with a 5% or great difference would be dark red. We have none of that. And you'll see that these boxes are sized by the size of the liability. So cost group two, which are the county general and superior court, smaller district, tier three and tier five members, that's the largest group in terms of the liabilities. For safety, that's cost group seven, which again is the county tier A and tier D. In both cases, our matches are very close, within 0.2% for cost group seven and 1% for cost group two. We can shift to looking at the employer rates. Similar story, we're trying to avoid anything that's dark red. We have some light orange, which is the largest cost group. Again, our difference is 3%, which we are definitely comfortable with. Our contribution rates are still within less than a percent of pay difference between our comparison and Siegel's. And again, these squares are sized by the size of the payroll for that cost group. So again, cost group two is by far the largest. Finally, we independently calculated each of the member rates. So for the legacy members, the non-PEPR members, those are based on the age at entry. We calculated each of those rates compared to Siegel's. We were close on all of those. The PEPRA member rates are based on 50% of the normal cost. We are close on all of those measurements. And what we're showing here is the average employee rate for each of the cost groups. And again, very good match. I think for all, we were within 0.2% of pay for each of these groups. So that sums up our match in terms of our valuation to Siegel's valuation. That's great. That means, you know, the report that's going to follow, we completely support the results of that valuation. I'm going to turn it over to Ann because we're going to talk a little bit about some of the assumptions and our recommendations for the next experience study.
All right. Just before you do that and while you're transitioning, were there any questions on the initial? It's a lot of good news, so it's likely wouldn't generate a lot of questions. No, I don't see any questions, so please, go ahead.
So typically when we do an audit, Graham described what we do for a full valuation replication audit. We normally just review the assumptions, but it's not the case for Sisera. The scope of this work was to actually go in, get all the data from Sisera, the raw data that was used in the experience study, so that three-year period from 2018 to 2020. And we also got Siegel's results from the experience study, and we replicated the results of the experience study in terms of the demographic side of that study. And the demographic side is all the behavioral assumptions like retirements, terminations, mortality, those kind of things. So we also did that full replication of that experience study, which was a lot of data work. So, and we want to thank Siegel for their help and helping us sift through some of that, how their terminologies and what they did in methodology. So when we're looking at the experience study, we reviewed the December 31st, 2020 experience study. That was the most recent study that was performed by Siegel back in 2022. There is going to be another experience study coming up for the period ending December 31st, 2023. So most of our findings for the replication of the experience study are just considerations for this next upcoming study, because we opine that they follow the methodologies in the actuarial standards of practice. We replicated all of their decrements, meaning their retirements, their terminations, and all of those things within a reasonable closeness. So we have no findings in terms of that. Again, it's just recommendations for the next study. So first, looking at the economic assumptions, those are the discount rate, inflation rate, wage growth, and COLA rates. We reviewed all of the analysis that Siegel did and agreed with that. They reduced all of their economic assumptions by 25 basis points, except for their COLA rates, which they kept at 2.75% for the 3% COLA cap groups. And we agree with that because typically California has higher inflation than the national average. So keeping it at 2.75% instead of reducing that to the inflation assumption of 2.5 gives you a slight margin of conservatism there. So they reduced the discount rate to 6.75% in that last study, the inflation rate to 2.5%, and then that wage growth to 3%. So their metrics looking at the inflation, here we're showing inflation year over year as of June 30th. And we use June 30th because we have more recent inflation using a June 30th date versus a December date. So you can see here, this is the inflation over the last 7 years. It kind of peaked. Everyone knows it peaked in 2021 and 2022, but then it's come down again in 2023 and 2024. So here we have that same historical inflation on the left side of the slide here, but then looking at what's called the break-even inflation, even though the forward-looking inflation expectations, you're looking at those on the right, have not changed much, even though there was some volatility in the inflation over the last 7 years. And what that break-even inflation is, it's a market indicator of what inflation is expected to be. And we're looking here at a 20-year period of the time horizon of inflation. So in 2018, the break-even inflation was 2.1%, and you can see it stayed below 3% for all of those years. So that 2.5% assumption that you currently have still remains reasonable. Now we're looking at those break-even inflation points between all the different time horizons, going forward 5 years, 10 years, looking forward 20 and 30 years. And you can see that in the long term, over a 30-year period, for all of those different time periods for the last 7 years, that break-even inflation rate is below your 2.5% assumption. And so we want to focus on that break-even rate because everyone is so very geared up on how high inflation has been, and you know, 2.5 seems so low, like how can this assumption be reasonable? And you can see that there was that historic blip, but it has come down in the last 2 years, and the forecast is, and this is a market-driven forecast, which is the difference between the TIPS and regular treasuries, that market-driven rate is less than 2.5% over the last 7 years. Just to reassure you, it just seems counterintuitive that a 2.5% inflation rate would be still reasonable. And Verus, your investment consultant, back in 2022 when the last study was done, their assumed inflation was around 2.3%, I believe. And in 2024, their assumed inflation is 2.4. So it hasn't really changed much from the last time the study was done to the current environment. Okay, so moving on to the assumed rate of return or your discount rate. When the study was done, your discount rate was 7%, right? And so we modeled what your asset allocation at that time looked like with the capital market assumptions back in 2022, and that's on the left-hand side. And then we also looked at Verus's capital market assumptions for 2024, and your most recently adopted asset allocation for 2024, and we modeled it as well. And you can see on the left-hand side that the assumed rates of return for your portfolio back in 2022 were between 6.75% and 7, a little bit higher in the long term. And then also then on the right-hand side, looking at what today's environment would show you of what your expected return would be, it's much higher. And that's not surprising because of the increases in the capital market assumptions since 2022, but mostly those interest rates have grown and have increased dramatically. Back in 2022, the U.S. Treasuries were on 1.5%, and now Verus's capital market assumptions for those are around 4.5%. So you're just getting a lot more bang for your buck out of those fixed income asset classes. Here we're looking at the likelihood of achieving your discount rate or your assumed rate of return. On the left-hand side, you can see again is 2022, and the likelihood back at that time with your allocation at that time, your asset allocation, in the short term, you were just under 50% likelihood of achieving that return, but in the long term, just about 53%. And those likelihoods have increased by about 10%, around 60%, given today's market environment and Verus's capital market assumptions, and also the switch to your asset allocation. But as I said before, the main driver of the increases in these expected returns and the likelihood that you're going to achieve your 6.75% return is based on the higher capital market assumptions. Your asset allocation is not more aggressive. It's not, you know, you haven't taken on more risk for this. It's just really in those new future economic outlooks. Here we're showing a comparison, a peer group comparison of discount rates of all the large public sector clients in California. There's about 39 of them that Chiron has looked at and done a survey on. This chart shows the trend of discount rates in California since 2008 to 2023. And you can see all over California, the discount rates have come down, right? And that range that you see represents the lowest and the highest rates in California for each of those years. And you can see that in 2023, you're right at the median, and in all past years, you've always been either at the median in California or below the median. So looking at 2023, these are all the different systems represented by the circles. You are the dark blue circle right at 6.75. And you can, if you wanted to go look even further at the distribution of those discount rates, you can see that there are about 16 systems at 6.75. So not only is it the median system, but it's the most common rate in California. Okay, so moving on to the demographic assumptions. We're not going to go through every single assumption that we analyzed. We're going to just focus on two of the assumptions that we are suggesting that Siegel can, you know, monitor in this next study because we saw some differences in what we may have suggested in terms of our recommendations of the assumption, but they are still reasonable, just to make sure you understand that. But we are just going to focus on the retirement rates and also this probability of a member having an eligible survivor, which if they do when they retire, they can elect that unmodified benefit option, which is essentially like a free 60% joint survivor option. And that's important because it can determine, you know, because the spouse has a benefit, it becomes a little bit more of a liability if there is a spouse who gets a free JNS. So, and it's all 37 Act County systems have that. Okay, so here we're looking at the retirement rates for the general Tier 3 enhanced group, and it's only the retirement rates for members who have less than 30 years of service. Siegel breaks their retirement assumptions between service for people who have less than 30 years of service and for members who have more than 30 years of service, and that makes sense because if the more service you have, the more likely it is that you're going to retire because your benefit will be larger. So we do support that structure of the assumption. So here we're showing the retirement rates for this group. It's over a six-year period. They went back and included experience from the prior experience study. And so here you're seeing the retirement rates for each age, and you can see how the rates increase as members age. And there's little spikes at 55 and 62. That's the trend. It's very normal to see those increases as members age because the multipliers get larger. Now here we're looking at the original assumption back when Siegel did this study, and you can see that the assumption is higher at most ages, that red line. And so Siegel recommended decreasing the retirement rates at ages 57 and above to be more in line with what the actual experience was. So to help understand how much data or how reliable the data is, we suggest building what we call confidence intervals around that actual rate. So those black dots are the actual rates of retirement at each age, and you build those confidence intervals, and your system has a lot of data for your general members. And so building these confidence intervals shows you that within a 90% confidence, that's where the true retirement rate lies. And so you can see that building those boxes at the earlier ages, there's a lot more data, and so there's a lot more reliability on the fact that those retirement rates would be within those, within that box. So given the proposed assumptions, we feel like at some of these ages, like at 54 and between 56 and before 62, that Siegel has room to lower some of these assumptions. Ooh, I missed one thing. I'm going to go back here. So I do want to point out that that these assumptions for this group specifically, the proposed assumptions still overestimate the number of retirements by about 20%. And so it's also for 40%, they've overestimated the general Tier 1 enhanced group, and then also more than 50% for the general PEPRA members.
So the retirement...
Question.
Yes.
What impact does that have with an overestimation?
Generally, if you're overestimating people retiring at earlier ages. Retiring at earlier ages tends to be more expensive for the system, particularly for safety members, right? You're receiving the benefit for a greater number of years. They may be getting a smaller benefit because they're getting a smaller multiplier, but usually there's still some subsidy occurring if you retire earlier. So all other things being equal, generally the lower you set those retirement rates and the later you assume people are going to retire, the lower the expected cost for the system. So we think that Siegel's being a little bit conservative in setting those rates a little higher than what the actual experience has been.
But for PEPRA, right? For PEPRA, it doesn't have as big of an impact because those multipliers, there's a much more built-in actual equivalence versus a subsidy. So if you, no matter when you retire, if you, not no matter when, but we've done sensitivity on retirement rates for the PEPRA groups, and it shows that there's not much difference in cost with changing those assumptions. So it's really more with the legacy group,
right? Which is still, you know, a decent sized population.
Let me ask one more question. Would you characterize that as a conservative assumption?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was my take.
Yes.
I just wanted to maybe say the obvious, that it, in terms of the grand math of
right.
the system, we're overfunded with respect to that eventuality rather than underfunded,
right.
correct?
Yes. Correct.
Correct.
Yep. So that assumption, the way it certainly currently stands compared to what your actual experience has been, right?
Right.
We don't know what the future is going to be. The future could be different. People could be retiring earlier. But as of right now, the way that they've structured that assumption, it is a little bit conservative. I'm sure you've heard the actuaries say something when it comes to the experience study. The experience study is as much art as science, right? I know I've heard some of our colleagues over here say that before, and I know we've said it before when we present experience studies, right? So we wanted to dive into this a little bit more just in terms of how much conservatism would we take in terms of these retirement rates. It seemed a little bit silly for us to just, you know, look at the data and say, you know what, we think you should have used this instead of this, right? A small difference in these numbers, just inserting our own judgment for Siegels. We're not trying to insert our own judgment for Siegels in this analysis. So the good thing is you have a large amount of retirement data for your general members, and it allowed us to use a different technique where we don't have to use our judgment. And I'll be honest, this is exciting for me. I haven't got to do this before, but we got to use AI to try to come up with its own retirement rates. So I don't know if you've ever heard of machine learning, but we built a machine learning model, which is a type of AI. And what we did was we took randomly 80% of the data for people who are eligible to retire as general members over the last 6 years. We used it to train a model, and everything that goes in, you put everything in the model. You put gender, age, service, what tier they're in, put all that into the model. And what the model does is by training it, it will come up with an assumption about how likely somebody is to retire, right? We're not directing it. It comes up, it uses an algorithm to come up with an assumption. So then what we did is we took the other 20% of the data that hadn't been used to train the model at all, and we tested it on that set of the data, right? What we found, and then we were able to, for each individual person, it comes up with an expected probability of retirement. We come up with our expected number for the entire group. We compare it to the actual number, and then we compared to Siegel's actual and expected numbers, right? So you may have heard the 8/E ratio in experience studies, the actual divided by the expected number. You want that to be as close to 100% as possible. The results were really interesting in that this model that, you know, we didn't touch, it came up with much more accurate predictions about the rates of retirement than the assumptions that Siegel, you know, had proposed at the last experience study. And what's kind of interesting about that is that Siegel used all of the data, 100% of the data, to set their assumptions. This wasn't a case where, well, of course our assumptions were close because we just used the data, and of course we were able to predict what happened because we're using the same data. That's not what happened. We use a completely different set of data to test the model. And what you see here, the graph on the left is showing the comparison of the actual to expected for Siegel over each of the 6 years. And what you notice is that all of those predictions are to the left of the 100% line, right? In every single year, it didn't matter which year that test set came from, Siegel's assumptions would have over predicted the number of retirements. The machine learning model results are on the right. In some years, it's less, and some years, it's greater. On average, over that six-year period, it's almost exactly 100%. So what this is showing is that model on the right came up with what we would consider to be an unbiased set of assumptions, right? Some years, you're going to have more retirements. Some years, you're going to have fewer. The predictions were kind of in the middle, right? Whereas Siegel's assumptions for every single year, didn't matter which year we looked at, they would have over-predicted the number of retirements on average by about 20%, right? And to get to your question about how does this impact, what's the level of conservatism, we did some quick runs where we just cut all the retirement rates by 20%, right? And the overall impact was to reduce the liability by about $100 million, contribution rate by about 1% of pay. Now, if we were to generate actual assumptions, we wouldn't just cut everything by 20%. But that gives you some sense of the level of conservatism that's inherent in that. So that was really the one assumption where we had the most data. We were able to kind of dive into that. The one other assumption that we want to comment on for the next experience study has to do with that number of people who are going to get that subsidized benefit, right? Because anytime you provide a subsidized benefit, that increases the cost of the system. And Siegel did a normal approach. What they looked at was for the people that retired, what percentage of them had an eligible spouse, right? Somebody who they'd been married to for at least a year who can get that free 60% survivor allowance and elected that unmodified allowance, so took that subsidy, right? They did it based on the number of people out of a three-year retirement window. And what they calculated was a 63% of males and 52% of females were taking that subsidized form. Pretty close to what their current assumptions were, 65% for males and 50% for females. We did our analysis on the data independently. We got slightly higher percentages, about 68% for males and 52% for females. So still close to your current assumptions, right? We wouldn't have recommended any change because of that. But we took a different approach and we weighted the experience based on the size of the benefits. Right? Because what ultimately matters to the plan is the dollars, right? It's not the number of people electing an option. It's what dollars are being paid out in terms of the retirement allowances. And what was interesting was we found that the percentage of people with larger benefits were more likely to have a spouse who could be subsidized, right? 75% was that ratio when we weighted the experience based on the size of the benefit. That's a pretty big increase from if you just look at the number of people who have an eligible spouse. This is very similar to what you may remember Siegel did last study in terms of analyzing the mortality experience. When they look at the mortality experience, they weight it by benefit. And the reason they do that is because people with higher benefits tend to live longer, right? It's sort of a proxy for socioeconomic status. And you don't want to underweight your liabilities. You want to make sure that you're predicting things correctly for the benefit payments, not for the number of people. So if you take the same approach in looking at marital status, there's also a socioeconomic component to marital status. People at higher wage levels tend to have higher rates of marriage, right? So we think that we would recommend that Siegel look at that when they do the next experience study, and it could result in an increase if the experience looks like it did the last 3 years. It could result in an increase in the percentage of people who are assumed to have a covered spouse, not because there's a higher number of people, but just because the people with the larger benefits are more likely to have that.
I just want to comment on this as well, that the reason we went ahead and did this additional analysis for this assumption is that when we saw what the current assumption was for this group, it was a little bit low when we compared it to other 37 Act systems in Northern California. So it was just kind of highlighted that, but it was caught our eye that they were a little bit low.
For the males in particular.
Yes, yeah.
So that really takes us through everything we had in terms of the experience setting our recommendations. We also review all the actuarial methods that were used in the evaluation. So your cost method, your smoothing methods, your amortization policy. I'm not going to read all this text. We think everything is reasonable. You also have cost sharing in terms of, right, how do you divide costs between the various cost groups? You've got some frozen closed employers. We think everything that's being done in terms of those policies is fine. It complies with actuarial standards of practice and guidance that's out there. We also review the report itself to make sure it's consistent with actuarial standards of practice, other guidance that's out there by the California Actuary Advisory Panel, which four of us in this room are on. Everything looks good. Everything is contained within that. And they did add, as I'm sure you're aware, the LD-ROM calculation to your evaluation, right? That low default risk obligation measure. We think the way that was calculated is reasonable. Turn over to Anne.
So we're just going to go over this one last comment that we have from our audit. And it's regarding projections and contribution rates. So in our last experience study audit and audit of the valuation, we did comment to Siegel that they should show projections in their report of the contribution rates and funded status. And we are aware that they actually do show contribution projections in an outside letter after the valuation, and they do it more than annually because they'll update it for recent investment return experience. So we commend them on that. And this is a projection from the December 31st, 2023 value, or 2022 valuation that they did with the 2023 returns, showing how the projection rates are increasing slightly over time because of some deferred asset losses, and then slowly come down to 26%. However, we are suggesting that when Siegel produces their letters for this valuation, that they take a look at changing and implementing the PEPR members coming in to replace the legacy members. And the reason for doing that is you see the normal cost rate, the contribution rate is made up of two pieces. You have your normal cost rate, and then you have your unfunded accrued liability payment. And their contribution rate projections only vary with that unfunded accrued liability payment with the deferred asset losses here. The net deferred asset losses. So now when PEPR members replace the legacy members, they have a much lower normal cost rate. So when that happens, that normal cost rate is going to come down for the plan as a whole. And because your contribution is structured such that the normal cost rate right now is more than 50% of your whole contribution, it is a bigger proportion of the contribution, so it will be a lot more sensitive to those changes in the normal cost rate over time. And just to show you here, you have your general cost group number 2 on the left-hand side, and the legacy tiers, that tier 3, and the contribution normal cost rate is 15.3%, but your tier 5, which is the PEPR member tier, is 10.4%. So there's a 5% decrease in the employer normal cost rate between those two groups. And as more and more of those Tier 5 members are hired and the legacy Tier 3 members retire, you're going to trend down towards that 10.4% rate for that cost group, for the general cost group. And the same is happening on the safety side. We're showing here cost group 8, where the legacy Tier A, is about 32%. And then the PEPR tier is about 16.5, so a very large drop, almost 15% of pay, almost half. So as, again, more and more of those PEPR tiers are hired, you're going to see that normal cost rate, the aggregate rate, come down over time. So we are suggesting that Siegel incorporates those into the projections of the contribution rates. So again, as Graham said, it was a very, very clean audit. We are just recommending some things that Siegel should look at or monitor in the next experience study. But as far as the valuation is concerned, everything is it was a very clean report card. So with that, we'll be happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you. I'm filling in for Scott momentarily. And are there any questions?
This is less a question. We didn't have this in our deck, in our packet, did we? The slides that you presented. It would be helpful if they're ready ahead of time to have them. I love to take notes with the slides in my iPad. So in the future, I would love to have them part of our packet if they're available at the time of publication. But very well, again, I really appreciated the simplicity. I read your whole report, and I love that you were highlighting particular areas. So thank you.
Thanks. This is an interactive website, so the website is live, and you can as you saw, like a lot of these things that you can click on and get more information.
Okay.
So that is available if you'd like to.
Terrific.
Have a link.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I can email that out to the full board.